Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfill those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
That's going on to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I think.
It's a record.
Here's Lucas Moura.
Oh, they've done it.
I'm loving big engines instead. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Hello, welcome to the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Dan Kilpatrick. I'm with Tom Allnut. We are in the garden of the Pied Bull, Enfield's finest pub. We've just been at Ange Postecoglou's pre-Fulham press conference previewing, of course, Monday night's game against the Cottagers in North London. And we thought we'd stop in for a quick half afterwards, just have a chat about what Postecoglou had said and look ahead to the Fulham game, since we didn't manage to get around to doing a pod midweek. Tom, Ange on great form as usual, I thought, and lots of interesting kind of newsy bits to get stuck into. I mean, let's go straight in on what I thought was the kind of big piece of news from the broadcast element of the press conference, which was that Rodrigo Bentancur is back in training, back in full training, Postecoglou says. He's not going to be in the squad against Fulham. Spurs are going to take their time reintegrating him. Postecoglou said he'd been drip-fed back into training over the last month or so, so I imagine it will be a similar case with him in competitive matches. But that's a boost for Spurs, and you know, the prospect of him being back in the team in the next few weeks is an exciting one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a massive boost. And I guess as well, when you think that they're going to lose Bissouma and Sarr for the Africa Cup of Nations as well, to have Bentancur back potentially significantly before then, do you think? I mean, if he's back fully training now, I guess this international break has given them a real good couple of weeks to give him some time out on the pitch. But it sounded to me like he's now training fully. I mean, that's what he said, wasn't it? Training fully.
So yeah, back in full training, full sessions.
I guess they think he's probably not quite ready for a competitive match. But the fact he's training again suggests that he might get some minutes, I would suggest, in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So it's a massive, massive boost for Spurs. And I think not only him, but the kind of the news after the international break that in fact Sonny seems like he's available and fine. Every time we think Sonny is, I don't know, kind of picked up kind of some kind of injury, or he's limped off, or he looks like he's got a groin problem, and yet we come to the press conference in the game and he's there and he's starting. So that kind of mystery sort of goes on a bit, I guess. But the fact that he and Romero are both available for the game Monday is a massive, massive plus for them, isn't it?
Yeah, Son said in the week that he hadn't trained fully for South Korea because of a niggly groin problem. Romero was forced off for Argentina, I think just after halftime of their game against Peru. So they were obviously concerned about them, but Postecoglou said all his internationals were fine. Johnson, I think, is the only one who's going to be assessed over the weekend. But as it stands, I think in terms of actual absentees, it's just Perisic, Solomon, and the long forgotten Ryan Sessegnon, whose name I don't think I've heard Postecoglou say yet.
So
He's the furthest away.
I mean, I think with Romero, I wasn't that surprised because I saw the injury and it was sort of a late challenge. It looked like a nasty kind of, I wouldn't say a stamp, but a sort of almost like a high studs on his ankle kind of challenge. The kind of thing that would have been very sore, I think, at the time, but it didn't look to me to like a muscular injury. The Son one is interesting. Like, I don't understand really how you can have a niggling groin strain and continue to play as much as he is. I mean, you know, to what extent? We're not going to know because the club don't give out these kind of details, and understandably so. But the idea that he's playing through a groin injury just seems to me to be quite strange. But clearly he's not. I mean, he played 90 minutes. He played well for South Korea, and he's ready. He's ready to go again. And Postecoglou seems to be happy to keep going with him.
I guess it's just that thing, like, professional footballers are just always carrying something, aren't they? They're never 100% fit.
I get that.
They're often just in pain of some kind.
I get that with knocks and bumps and bruises, but I just feel like with something like a groin, it's like a hamstring, isn't it? Like, not that we're kind of at all qualified or professional in this area, but it feels to me like a groin, a hamstring, a calf. Like, you've either got something or you haven't, and you're either making it worse or you're not. But anyway, he's there.
Anyway, I actually asked Postecoglou about this. Unfortunately, it's embargoed till next week. But he gave a really good answer on Son. Is well worth seeking out in Monday's Evening Standard.
Shame.
There you go. There you go, my boss. There's a nice plug for the paper. Bissouma will miss the game. We know that much. He's suspended. He's got a one-match ban after being sent off against Luton, of course. Postecoglou basically said what he's going to do. He said Højbjerg is the ready-made replacement and the logical one to step in. Unless that's a bit of scandalous kind of misdirection for Marco Silva, then it seems like he's going to play with Saar in the middle. I mean, how do you think that will affect Spurs? I mean, he obviously hasn't started a game this season apart from the Carabao Cup defeat at Fulham.
That'd be pretty harsh, I think, like on Højbjerg, wouldn't it? Like, not only not to play him all season, but then sort of use him as a kind of like a dummy scapegoat.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that is the game.
Pre-match mind games. I mean, sort of next level of sidelining. But yeah, I mean, I think he's going to come in. I agree. It was sort of surprising that he sort of said in the press conference, you know, the logical choice is that he will come in. He did sort of say we've got a couple more sessions, but I don't know. I mean, if you already Skip, or who else would possibly come in there?
I think it's just Skip. I mean, obviously, Bentancur in time.
Yeah.
I think Lo Celso is more of a Maddison replacement. I think he's the kind of six. I think he's more of a eight or 10.
So I wonder how Skip kind of looks at that and thinks, okay, you know, I'm definitely not the logical choice. But still, you know, I think that's understandable. Højbjerg has come in and done well, I think, off the bench. And I'm kind of pleased for him to get this opportunity. I've got to say, I know there's a sort of significant section of the fan base that are very much over Højbjerg. But I do think he's come in, he's done well, he's been professional this season. The contributions he had made in the pitch have actually been quite important. I thought he was very good against Luton, for example. So, you know, he's definitely got an uphill task to kind of push Bissouma out of the team in any way. But I think he's got a chance here to sort of say that he can be part of the squad going forward longer in the season.
Yeah, I think my big pro for Højbjerg is he is an experienced head. I think whenever he's come on this season, and he's come on in different situations, he's come on in some games where Spurs are protecting a lead, and I think he's come on in some games where they're chasing a goal. And I think every time he's kind of done what the team needs him to do in quite a professional, unfussy, kind of unselfish way. Against Liverpool, Spurs were chasing a goal against nine men, and he was kind of passing progressively, looking to create some angles. And when they've been up against Luton, he's kind of calmed things down and just looked to kind of keep the ball. Mm. And he's done what kind of needs to be done. And I think there's something to be said for having someone in the team who's played a lot of football, who has won things, of course, with Bayern Munich, and has been in kind of those dressing rooms where they know how to sort of see out games or chase games. And obviously Perisic was that kind of player as well. He's now out for probably the whole season. And Højbjerg is kind of the only one left in the squad, really, that has that level of experience. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Mm-hmm.
On the downside, I would say I don't like him being pressed. I think we saw that at Craven Cottage. Fulham are a good pressing side under Marco Silva. They know, you know, when to go, when to stay. They're well organised. And I think they gave Spurs a really tough time in midfield in that game. It was Skip and Højbjerg. Spurs just massively missed Bissouma and Maddison, who can kind of wriggle out of tight spaces. And my concern would be Højbjerg being pressed into uncomfortable positions and kind of losing the ball in a way that Bissouma wouldn't. But we know he's not going to do exactly what Bissouma has done.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously an interesting one, this game, because Bissouma has been so good for Tottenham that not to have him, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the team has to kind of adapt and shape up. I mean, look at how Rodri, for example, at Manchester City, they basically lost two or three games down the spin just because he's been out.
Yeah,
you know,
point.
These kind of central midfielders who become the sort of anchor and the tempo setters, they really are important. So yeah, I think, you know, Højbjerg has his chance.
Yeah, my instinct actually is that Bissouma is even more important than we've realised yet. I mean, I keep going back to that Barcelona friendly where it was largely the second team, but Bissouma played, I think Vicario played and Porro. And Spurs were great. They went a goal down early, but they ran the game after that. They were all over Barca. And I just think Bissouma was a huge part of that. And when you have him in the side, almost like Dembele used to do for Spurs, you got someone who's capable of kind of beating the press and running the game from that central area. And I think he'll be a big miss against Fulham. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Lo Celso and Hill, both hoping for their first minutes in the league. In Hill's case, they've had a couple of weeks training. He's had a couple of weeks training. And Lo Celso came on twice for Argentina during the break, played a few minutes in each game. I mean, where do you think they'll play, Tom? I mean, I guess Hill on the right wing as a kind of Kulusevski alternative?
Yeah, I think that's probably his best position on the right, kind of coming inside. And Lo Celso, I think you said it before, he's a sort of replacement for Maddison, right? I mean, I think it would be to play Lo Celso and Maddison in a three-man midfield seems to me, even in the kind of games against lower lower tier opposition seems to me a little bit ambitious and expansive. I think Lo Celso will be a really good rotation from Alisson either later in games, or you could bring him on in the front three, like he has played there before, off the flanks, coming inside. So I think, you know, Lo Celso is a very sort of versatile player. I think his best position is as a number eight, no doubt about that. But I think he could play on either flank if you wanted to kind of bring off Richarlison or any of the front three in the kind of last 20-30 minutes. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing Hill under Postecoglou. I really think he's the kind of player that perhaps we could see shine a little bit. I mean, if we kind of think about Conte's style and methods, I just think that was always a match that was not going to work. And so it'd be nice to see Hill with a coach who kind of believes in creative flair players, giving those players freedom and confidence to play and to take risks. So I think if Hill is going to make it in the Premier League and make it at Spurs, then I think he's going to do it under Ange. And if not, then he's probably not.
Yeah, there was an interesting line from Postecoglou in the presser just now, actually saying something along the lines of, this isn't verbatim, but he had no doubt that he could do the role for us or something like that, which obviously is in stark contrast to Conte, who used to kind of consistently say he was a talented player, but not cut out for the Premier League effectively, you know, too lightweight. So already a change of rhetoric there. And I do think people should be excited about Lo Celso and Hill. I mean, I've got my doubts about sort of both of them, really, but we've seen Postecoglou confound expectations over Sarr, over Porro, over more or less every player, in fact. So there's no reason that those two can't shine under him as well.
How do you think Maddison is going into this game, Dan? I mean, you saw him over the international break with England. Feels like, from sort of the outside, that he didn't necessarily sort of put his foot forward really again, and it didn't really happen for him.
Yeah, I mean, he played in a very experimental England 11 against Australia, and he was, I thought, one of the better players, but that wasn't saying much because England were pretty flat. I mean, he set up a chance for Watkins in the first half with a kind of great pass through. Watkins hit the post, but then he also spanked the shot out of play for a throw-in, which was quite memorable. And kind of spoke to it not really clicking for him in an England shirt in the same way it has for Spurs this season. He's well in there with England now. You know, he's well ahead of, say, Mason Mount, who was a kind of Southgate favourite, you know, not so long ago. And it'll be hard to dislodge. But, you know, it does feel to me like he's kind of competing for the number 10 spot with Jude Bellingham. And he's not ousting Jude Bellingham, frankly, given the way Bellingham's played.
I was going to say, it seems like his role is pretty obvious. Like he's not going to get in the starting team, is it?
No.
We're not going to see him start in the first game next summer. But equally, I think he's pretty much nailed on to be in the squad. So he'll be there. He'll be coming on off the bench. He might play in the kind of third group game once England have got through. He's going to be that kind of player, impact sub, coming on and trying to change games for the team. And I think, you know, that's maybe a shame for him and possibly for England, but maybe not such bad news for Spurs.
Yeah, completely. And I think there's an interesting point here about Spurs, which is that when Harry Kane plays for England, it's a little bit harder for Maddison because obviously Kane wants to drop into those areas. He wants to kind of run the game as a number 10 / number 9 for his country. That's what he always does. And that kind of, you know, when he played against Ukraine, Maddison, he was playing from the left, but I felt like him, Bellingham and Kane were often kind of in each other's way. They were getting in the same areas. And I don't think he's as effective when he's got a player up front who wants to sort of do the same thing as him. So,
but then we saw, didn't we, in that preseason friendly, I agree, and maybe this is all hypothetical and irrelevant anyway, but we saw in that preseason friendly when Maddison and Kane, what was it, the last one when Kane scored hat-trick or four, I can't remember now.
Four
goals. And it just looked like such a good connection. But anyway, I mean, it's a nice segue anyway into the question that Postecoglou got today from Martin Tyler, who kind of came into the press conference and hasn't been at that many, but it kind of meant that he still had a fresh question to ask about Kane. And Postecoglou said, didn't he, that he feels that Kane's kind of absence, his departure, has allowed the team to play in a different way, and it's allowed him to kind of set up the team in a different way as well, which I thought was interesting. And there was other kind of angles on today that we didn't really kind of get into in any detail, but it was, I thought, an interesting admission from him that maybe for the first time, I don't know, that it's kind of allowed Spurs to play differently tactically, you know, with Son, and obviously we know how Kane kind of coming deep all the time perhaps would have got in Maddison's way. It's that kind of cliche thing about others stepping up, but I think that has actually been the case in terms of the way Spurs play with the ball. They're no longer looking for Kane all the time. They're looking wide. They're much more varied in their attacks. Do you think that's
I think that's definitely a fair assessment. I mean, I've got to say, watching England in the week against Italy, you know, it was a kind of reminder of just how good Harry Kane is. You know, he's almost quickly forgotten just what a presence he is and how good he is at kind of picking up the ball in the central areas and sort of spreading it, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone knows how good Kane is. But yeah, I think Kane was so good that he kind of straitjacketed Spurs into a style that they had to play. You know, they had to play through him at all times. And I think what Ange was getting at today, and I'd love him to expand on it in future, is that it does feel a little bit more collegiate now. It does feel like they have kind of perhaps more ways to hurt teams, albeit without this kind of world-class number 9/number 10 hybrid, but more kind of collectivism. And I think that's obvious. And you look at the kind of numbers for the defenders this year. I mean, Udogie's got a couple of assists. Porro's got at least one assist. Yeah. Van de Ven scored one. Romero scored two. You know, that everyone's chipping in across the board. And obviously that wasn't the case last season when it was more or less all down to Kane. So I think there's obvious tactical tweaks, like Son up front, Madison with a bit of a free roll. I don't think Postecoglou would describe it that way, but certainly he moves around within the structure. And I don't know if those things would be possible if Kane was still a Spurs player. That's not to say Spurs wouldn't be better, because I think they probably would.
The obvious question is to throw in what would Spurs be like with Madison, with Postecoglou, with this kind of style.
They couldn't be any higher in the table. but they might have more points.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this team with Kane up front would be frighteningly good, because you could put Son on the wing. I do feel that Richarlison, who will probably play on the left again, is probably one of the players you could most easily upgrade.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a counterfactual, isn't it? And I think everyone's happy with kind of how things are going post-game.
Which leads us, I think, into the Fulham game. And I think maybe one of the big issues that was talked about in the press conference today was obviously the situation in Gaza and how that sort of translates very vaguely, very tenuously to Tottenham and this match. And obviously, I think it's worth saying that nothing that we talk about here has obviously got any kind of comparison in terms of the importance. But, you know, Spurs do have a very long association, don't they, with the Jewish community. And I think there has been a sort of disappointment, unhappiness, and dissatisfaction with how the club sort of responded last week in their statement, not acknowledging the Jewish fan base. I wonder if this match will kind of be particularly emotional in terms of the occasion on Monday night. Well, it's worth saying, I mean, the club's policy is always that basically they don't allow banners or flags or anything basically that the club would consider to be inflammatory. So we
or political.
Political, exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, we obviously see a lot of South Korea flags, for example, Argentina flags sometimes. When Conte was manager, we saw even some Italy flags in the stadium. And I guess, you know, the line there is that they're sort of seen as flags that are sort of supportive, whereas in this sense, it's slightly more, it's much more political, which kind of puts the club, I think, in a slightly awkward position, because ultimately that is a judgment call, isn't it? It's a judgment call for the club to decide what banner, what flag is political, what isn't, where's the line between the flag, you know, the South Korea flags in support of Sonny, for example, or Conte, and the Israel flags that might be there on Monday night. It's obviously a very complicated issue. We were saying that it's a difficult one for the club. I mean, it's, you know, you can understand the frustrations of Jewish supporters, particularly of Tottenham, but I guess as well for the club, if they were to allow a lot of Israel flags and banners, and then there are also, you know, equally from the other side, you know, Arab flags and banners, Palestine, for example, it could create a situation, could create tension inside the stadium. I think it's a very difficult one for the club to get right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the club wants to acknowledge that connection with the Jewish community and should acknowledge that connection. But as you said, if they say you can display Israel flags, then inevitably there would be Palestinian flags. And as you said, it would then become a kind of political arena. It might create tension. But I think, you know, nonetheless, it promises to be potentially quite an emotional occasion. Postecoglou spoke very, very well on this, as you'd imagine. His quotes are embargoed till 10:30 on Sunday night for kind of Monday's newspapers. I urge kind of people interested in this topic to seek it out, because as ever, I think he struck the right note and was able to talk about the role football plays in this kind of situation really, really well.
Mm. So if we talk a bit about the game, finally.
Yes.
I mean, it's a big opportunity for Spurs, isn't it? Top of the table. And I guess these are the matches where, when you're in this kind of position, they've had a lot of attention, a lot of hype, a lot of people are suddenly talking about them and Postecoglou, and couldn't it be title challenges? These are the ones they need to just kind of get over the line and keep the momentum ticking over.
Yeah, completely. I mean, and Fulham are no mugs, but, you know, this is the kind of game, an evening fixture at home, you know, London derby, top of the table, that I think you know, Spurs will be fully expected to kind of put on a show in. And I've kind of no reason to doubt that they will. And I think the fact that it's Monday does help them. I mean, they've obviously got more international players than Fulham. I don't think they want to be playing Cesare lunchtime game this weekend with the doubts over Son and Romero. You know, having that extra couple of days does help. But then there's a Friday night game next week as well with the Palace match. So Postecoglou is going to have some kind of work to do, I think, in the middle of the week. But in terms of this game, sounds like everyone's fit and firing. Yeah, I have no reason not to feel pretty confident about Spurs' hopes.
Is there a danger in these kind of matches, I wonder, with Spurs doing so well, being top of the league? And even Postecoglou has kind of said, you know, it's not on me to kind of dampen the fans' expectations. Is there a slight danger that everyone's sort of expecting a 4-0 win? Everyone's expecting a brilliant performance, Tottenham to play really fun, exciting football and to win easily. And actually, you know, Fulham have already beaten Tottenham this season and it could be 0-0 after an hour and they might have to handle that kind of frustration. And I don't know. I mean, it feels like the dial has already shifted a little bit for Tottenham, that they're no longer a team that everyone was writing off at the start of the season. They're going to finish 7th or 8th, me included. Suddenly everyone's talking about...
Oh, no, you were saying 14th. Okay.
We don't need to go into the details. Yeah, I mean, everyone's saying they're top four for sure and possibly even title contenders.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of better they do and the longer they're unbeaten and the more they're top of the table and the more they're up there, the more they become a scalp and the more, you know, teams are going to raise their game and not kind of underestimate them. So, yeah, there's definitely that element. I mean, we've been saying on this pod basically every week or every 3 days since the start of the season, you know, a setback is coming. And I think fans, you know, have to be prepared for that. It has felt, you know, every week confidence has grown and it has felt like, you know, Spurs are just getting better and better and riding this wave and building momentum. But there have been some close run things in the last few weeks. And there's no doubt that eventually Spurs' luck will turn. I don't want to be a downer, but, you know, without Bissouma this weekend and, you know, possibly with a, you know, a few players carrying knocks or whatever, you know, this could be the night. But I see no reason why Spurs can't go into that, you know, full of confidence and ready to sort of put on a show.
I think we should wrap up. There's a guy just 5 metres away who's been soaring doors here at the pub and now scraping up the remnants, I think. So hopefully that hasn't ruined the sound on the pod. But
yeah. I've run out of things to say about Fulham. I need to watch them and do some research. But yeah, as ever, thank you for listening. Please do give us a rating or review or whatever, or just shout about us to your mates in the pub.
Look out for the reaction pod after the match.
Yes, we'll be back after the game on Monday night with some reaction. But until then, thanks for listening.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.